For those who were not able to join lecture today, I have delayed the next lecture exam until Friday, May 22nd. That is not because there's going to be a bunch of extra material. It is as before, just to give me the chance to make sure I thoroughly cover everything and to give you all a fair chance to make sure that you have studied everything. So we are currently working in the equilibrium chapter, but we did dip our toe into the acid-base chapter. And of course, there's a lot more discussion about acid-base chemistry that will be coming. So as a general statement, the only topics from the acid-base chapter that will be on the exam are the things we've already talked about in lecture, which is really a narrow set of topics. And yes, on Wednesday, once I've finished everything today, I will go over a review of the topics just as I've done before. So primarily, the exam is about the equilibrium chapter with a little bit of acid-base chemistry thrown in. Now, there are a few sections of the chapter we still haven't finished, and so I would like to walk through the chapter again today to highlight some of those sections. But I know one that's going to come up right away, and I was thinking about how to make the section make more sense. And I finally decided I had to go to this equation that you've seen before that I said wouldn't come until a later chapter, but boy, does it make the whole discussion a lot easier if we can use that equation. So let me switch over here to the notes. Let's see, I see a few things. Okay. That sounded ominous. No, really, this time, no Dr. Evil. We're just delaying the exam so we can finish. Okay. So here's this equation that I've displayed before, and by the end of the quarter, be like, oh, thank God, he finally got through that equation. And the point of this equation is it says that the balance of energy in products and reactants, this is the delta G, which I called free energy, which I called potential energy. What happened to my right hand? Oh, I thought this class already asked that. I mean, when you backhand a student so many times in class, eventually you get like repetitive stress injury. So no, actually it's because of too many years of writing and playing and all that. And overly aggressive yard work is what really set it off. So terraforming the garden outside into something useful, because now I'm growing tomatoes and squash and cucumbers and everything else, so I don't have to pay ridiculous prices at the grocery store. So anyways, delta G, that is the balance of energy between products and reactants. You know, I just recorded all that, and someone's going to take that out of context the wrong way, aren't they? Okay, so what is the balance of energy between reactants and products? Well, it establishes the concentrations of reactants and products. And that's what these reaction progress diagrams that I've been drawing are trying to represent, this change in energy of the system as you go from reactants to products. So let's say we have some form of reversible reaction that is obviously very favored. So this is a delta G less than zero. And energy on our y-axis, reaction progress on the x-axis. And of course, that means the equilibrium is going to lie here to the right. And let's say this is the reversible process of A going back and forth to being B. Well, what if we took the exact same reaction, but we want to talk about the process of B going back and forth to A. Well, it would be everything in reverse, wouldn't it? Now the energy change would be the other direction. And then, of course, the equilibrium constant is going to lie over here to the left. Now, let's take that equation up above there, shall we? What if I take the negative of that energy? Because I did the reverse reaction. I say here energy inverses. What that means, well, it's negative in one case and it's positive in the other. But whatever it is, I'm taking the negative of it. All right? So that is equal to the negative of RT ln of k. Now, math, which means trickery happens. If you take that negative and you put it inside the log, you get RT ln of 1 over k. Right? So, and then what we'll say is delta G reverse, because it's the negative of the forward reaction. And that is going to be equal to negative RT ln of 1 over k for the forward reaction. So what does that mean? If the reaction is reverse, the reverse equilibrium constant is just 1 over the forward equilibrium constant. And what I'm referring to now is section, where are you, book? 17.2, I believe it is. So let me scroll back here to the beginning one more time. Because section 1 was, what is equilibrium? And OMG, have we talked about what equilibrium is. So we're done with 17.1. And 17.2 is where we start playing around with Q and K. So we've done all the discussion of what Q is and what goes into Q and what K is and what goes into K. And we've done some Q versus K problems. And then there's a separate section for what happens if you don't have Q equal to K. In other words, how do you figure out the equilibrium concentrations? But then there's this section here that starts in page 754, roughly, 753. That's exactly where it gets into what do you do if the reaction goes into reverse. So I'm finally catching up with that section in the book.
Is that the 8th edition? Because usually your references are different and I can't find them in 8th edition. Every time you list a page number?
This says 8th edition ebook. I don't know if there's a difference. It's possible that what they present online is different than the print. I wasn't aware of that, so I will try to find it. So in my text, it's expression 17.5, like a green box with equations. That's where this comes up. So if the page number is wrong, hopefully that number is right. 17.5 equation. It then goes on. Like there's more relationships. So take your screenshots, please.
I have a question about the equation.
Yeah.
Is the first equation supposed to be a reverse?
The very first I should label that one too. No, the very first equation says, as I said, what would happen if we took the forward reaction and reversed it. And I said, well, it'll just be the negative of whatever the energy is. And then later on, once I talked a little bit, I said, okay, well, reverse of the forward energy is the reverse energy. So what I was trying to do is I was trying to make a mathematical justification for why does the K simply invert? And it's because it has a logarithmic relationship to energy. And if you take the negative of energy and then figure out what that means in terms of logs, it's the reciprocal.
Okay.
But when I say things like that, you know, that's math, and not everybody speaks math the same way. So that's why I went through this discussion. Because, in fact, if I may continue, then it's the same thing that happens here. Suppose that you have two reversible reactions. You have A going back and forth to B, and you have C going back and forth to D. Well, what would you get if you put the two reactions together? What would be the equilibrium constant then? And let's say that we call the equilibrium constant for the first reaction K1 and the second reaction K2. It turns out that the total equilibrium constant is the product of K1 and K2. But again, there's a mathematical justification for that, because we could say that there is a heat or a pre-energy change in reaction 1. And that's going to be negative RT ln of K1. And then you're going to have a change in energy for reaction 2 that is related to the equilibrium constant for reaction 2. So if you add the two energies together, because Hess's law says that it does not matter how the process occurs, it just matters what the overall transformation is. So it doesn't matter that we're combining two reactions. What is the overall energy of the reactants, and what is the overall energy of the products, which you get by adding these two things together? And what you get is negative RT ln of K1 plus ln of K2. But that is mathematically the same thing as ln of K1 times K2, and that's how we get that the total equilibrium constant is just the product of each individual equilibrium constant. I know it's math, but that is pretty much all that matters. So there's some other things and rules in here that really we could get into later, but you learned enough. So that's section 17.2. So then we have 17.3, which is KC and KP, which we already did that. And then Q and K, comparing them, we have, of course, done that. And then equilibrium problems, so ice problems. We're going to do one more ice problem today that is going to be representative of what could be on the exam. But let's go to this last section first of Le Chatelier's principle. Because there's one thing I didn't get to in this section in Chatelier's principle. And for mathematical reasons and time, I just want to make this remind you of the statement that I've made in the past. And what the statement is that the only factor that can change an equilibrium constant K is temperature. Because only a change in temperature will change the balance of energy. Between reactants and products. I'm sorry, there was a question that came to the chat window. For K total, is it supposed to be K1 plus K2? No, it is the product. So if you look where that log explanation is right below it, you see that you have log of K1 plus log of K2. But the rule of log says that's equal to the log of the product of the things inside the individual logs. In other words, log of K1 times K2. That thing that goes in the log is the equilibrium expression, K. So the combined K is the product of the individual Ks. Now back to the current topic. We have the temperature change is the only thing that affects the internal energy, you could say, of the system. So that's why K changes. In the last section of the text here, there is what is known as the Van 't Hoff equation, which lets you convert equilibrium constants from one temperature to another. We're not going to have it on the exam. We will talk about it afterwards. But exactly this log argument here that I'm using to justify games that we play with equilibrium constants, same thing happens with coming up with the Van 't Hoff expression. So if playing around with logs is something that makes people uneasy, that's why we're delaying a little bit. So that means we've talked about everything except one last example of an ice problem. Any questions then? Okay, so I'm going to call this ice problem strategy. Because the theory behind a do the math, it's not that hard. It's where do you start and what changes? Because that will automatically tell you what do you have at the end. But it's the start part that people have the problem with. So in order to write a problem, to work an ice problem, you have to correctly write the reaction equation that's going on. So what is the reaction that is occurring? And why does that matter? Because the stoichiometry determines K. More correctly, the structure of K. Remember, it's products raised to their stoichiometric coefficients divided by reactants raised to their stoichiometric coefficients. So if you don't pick the right equation, then you're going to get the wrong form for K, and then you're going to solve the wrong kind of ice problem. Then the other question is, what are the initial conditions? Excuse me. So I want to work one more acid-base problem. The reason being is that that's the most crucial type of equilibrium problem you're going to work this quarter and one of the major ones you work next quarter because we're not done with acids and bases this quarter. It's a big topic. So yes, there are other equilibrium examples, but because you spend so much time on acid-base equilibrium, why not learn early to get good at dealing with acid-base problems? Kind of makes sense, right? All right. Screenshots, please. No autographs.
Can I get your autograph?
Let me become that famous person that maybe I'll be one day, so I can charge you for it.
Aw.
Okay, so hydrogen cyanide is a weak acid. That has an acid dissociation constant equal to, oh great internet, what is the Ka of hydrogen cyanide? And the answer is 6.2 times 10 to the negative 10. What is the pH of a 0.1 molar aqueous solution of hydrogen cyanide or hydrocyanic acid? Well, he only wants our money. It's called a joke, people. Wow. If I was only doing things, and I mean this in various ways when I say this, if I was only doing this for the money, do you think I'd be here? Just ponder on that for a little bit. All right, so what did I say that we had to do in order to approach this? Well, what is the reaction? And the answer is auto-ionization. What does it mean for something to be an acid? This is why we bore you with the definitions. pH is a potential of hydrogen, I think, is technically what the phrase translates as. And the reason it's called potential is because log of hydrogen concentration ends up being related to energy. Short, slightly inaccurate version of the story, but good enough. So that's why it's called that. So hydrogen cyanide, hydrocyanic acid. What is the definition of acid? Something that dissociates to produce H+. Now, if you have, out of fear or curiosity or both, looked ahead at the acid-base chapter at all, because I did introduce acid-base terminology. And those of you who like or insist on a linear progression through the textbooks, give up the dream, because once you transfer, especially once you get an upper division courses, you just have to find it on your own. So I'm not trying to be flippant or rude, I'm just saying you're going to have to get used to it, so why not now? So the acid-base chapter, it talks about conjugates, and it talks about inverse relationship between acid and conjugate-base strength, and goes on from there, and we haven't talked about any of that yet. So don't worry about any of that yet. It's the fact that an acid dissociates to produce H+. So that's why I wrote the equation the way I did. Definition of an acid. Dissociates to produce H+. So that's why when someone asks what the pH is, you do this. Because what causes pH? Things dissociating. What's dissociating? An acid. That's why it makes an effect on the pH. Now, what are the initial concentrations? So to further explain this, the concentration of hydrogen cyanide is automatically 0.1 molar because it is assumed that dissociation has not yet occurred. That's not a question. That's a statement. That's the way we conceptualize the initial. Then what does that mean for the initial concentration of cyanide? Well, you hope in pure water it's zero. And that's because the reaction hasn't happened yet. The trickier one is what is the concentration of H+, and that is equal to 1.0 times 10 negative 7th molar at 25 degrees Celsius due to the auto-ionization of water. Because water is a weak acid itself. So you have one acid and another acid. Now, of course, many acids are stronger than water, so they'll force water to have a higher concentration of H+. But that's why, even when there's nothing in water, there's some H+ around. But in most problems, the acid dissociates significantly more than water does. And the question just popped up is, where does the H plus come from in the first place? Or what does the value come from? So Kw is the autoionization of constant for water, which I reviewed a couple of notes back. It's not on the exam because that's an acid-based topic, but I just introduced it to maybe come up with what this value is. So this is due to water's behavior, and after exam, I will more fully explain where does the value come from. But I'm also explaining why we don't normally worry about it, because, as written here, in most problems, the acid dissociates significantly more than water does. So the autoionization of water can usually be ignored. And in fact, if your instructor is making sure to do his math right when he makes the problems, it will always be ignorable. Because it's just a pain for everybody if it's not. And it's not the normal situation. Biologically, that might not be true, so you biochemists might have to learn real acid-based chemistry one day. I hear the screams of joy coming from the screens. Okay. Screenshots, because now we're going to work the problem, now that I've gone much more in detail of how to work the problem.
Woohoo!
There we go. Wow! Human interaction! Next thing you know, people will be turning on their screens or something. But most of us instructors are like, don't! We don't know if our Wi-Fi connections can handle it. So, all right, next screen. Let's see here. So, reminder of what the reaction is. We've got hydrocyanic acid dissociating into H+ and CN-. And since everything's mutually soluble, that's why you've got everything in the equilibrium constant. So first, the structure of the equilibrium constant is going to be Ka is equal to H plus times CN minus over HCN. And again, that's nothing more than a general equilibrium constant anyways, because that's what it is, products over reactants. And this is a very simple case where everything's got 1:1:1:1 stoichiometry. So very simple looking expression. Now we do the ice problem. Initial concentrations. Wait, let me make this more clear. Here's our stuff that's involved. Reactants versus the products. And what their initial change and end concentrations are going to be. So the initial concentration of hydrogen cyanide is going to be 0.1 molar because that's what we were given in the problem. We already talked about how that hydrogen, we're going to start out as zero, and then we'll check and see if our answer makes sense later on. And then cyanide is automatically zero because the reaction hasn't happened yet. So now what's going to happen? Well, what is Q? At this point in the reaction, Q equals what?
Negative X.
Zero. because you have 0 times 0 over 0.1, which is 0. So that means the only way the reaction can go is forward. So this is going to go down by x. And that's because q is equal to 0. The reaction goes forward. So forward means that you consume products. That you consume reactants to make products. Now, stoichiometry, you get this. Which is why later on, you'll have slightly more complicated ice problems. Because it won't always be such a nice one-to-one-to-one-to-one-to-one relationship. Now, what will the end concentrations be? Whatever you start with, combined with the change that occurs. So we're going to get 0.1 minus x, x, and x. And what we do is we throw that back into the equilibrium expression. So we get x times x over 0.1 minus x is equal to 6.2 times 10, negative 10. Now, let's see if any of our assumptions were okay. Because we're going to make another one right now. Since HCN is a weak acid, which means that KA is much less than 1, X is likely very small compared to 0.1 molar. In other words, it's likely that 0.1 minus x is pretty much equal to 0.1 itself. So let's make that assumption. What we get is x squared is equal to 0.1 times 6.2 times 10 to negative 10, which of course is equal to 6.2 times 10 to the negative 11. And so x is equal to, oh great computer, 7.87 times 10 to the negative 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Ooh, not so good. Why is that? Well, yes. X is small. Compared to 0.1 molar. So, it was fine, you could say, to approximate the concentration of hydrogen cyanide. In other words, we got rid of the minus X. And actually, when I look at this again, maybe things aren't as bad as they seem. Because what if we compare this to the concentration of H plus in water alone? Then X is 78 times greater than the concentration of H plus in water. So it was fine to ignore water. Now, any weaker of an acid, then it really wouldn't do anything to water. Water would be the stronger acid. But it's strong enough. It's still okay in this problem. You'll get a good enough result. And if I could just squeeze it on the page here. The pH will equal the negative base 10 log of 7.8, 7 times 10, negative 6. And that's equal to 5.1. Screenshots, please.
No. Professor?
Yes, one moment. One moment, just because I just realized my chat window's been blocked. So let me see if there's anything there. Okay, please, go ahead.
I didn't quite catch. Why is 6.2? Why did you set it equal to the constant, the equation?
Because that is the experimentally measured value of Ka. Let me put that in the notes. In other words, every substance has a Ka value for it that is an acid. And just the Wikipedia search even would give you a Ka value. So I literally just searched the internet when I chose this substance because I remember it being right at the edge of acceptable for being used in a problem. So I thought it would be good to do it to discuss where can we simplify. So the Ka value is something that you have to be given. Unless there is a simple kind of problem where here are all of the equilibrium concentrations, calculate the equilibrium constant. And all that really means is being able to write the equilibrium constant and then just plug the values in. So it's not much of a problem. But that would be the one case where you're not given Ka, you're given everything else. You're giving all the end concentrations. And so you'll see that kind of problem in the future.
The equation, it's reactants over products, right?
Products over reactants, always.
Products over reactants.
Products over reactants. Products over reactants. That's how equilibrium works.
Professor?
Yes, and also there's a clarification. Is Ka much less than 1? Yes, it is, because 10 to the negative 10th is way less than 1. So it's a weak acid, which by definition means it does not dissociate. Next question, please.
During the problem, you said that because acids dissociate significantly more than water,
yes,
the initial concentration of water or of the water can be ignored, right?
Right. The initial concentration of the H plus in water.
Of the H plus, okay. And then just out of curiosity, weak acids, is there any point at which we would include the H plus concentration in water?
Yeah, as soon as the Ka gets about the same as water or smaller.
Okay.
So there are.
So this is pretty close then.
Yeah, this is right on the edge of the acid not mattering.
Okay.
Which is the point of why I chose it in this discussion. And in most real-life problems involving aqueous acids, they're all stronger than this. Now, the flip side of the problem comes later, next quarter, when you learn about acids and bases again, because there are these things called buffers, where they help to keep the pH roughly the same, which, remember, I said that log of hydrogen concentration is somewhat related to energy. So, in other words, it keeps the energy relatively the same in terms of hydrogens. So the body has a natural system where it keeps the pH level of your blood stable, even though different parts of your body might be very different in pH themselves. So you'll come back to this topic later on.
Thank you. And then also to the negative log of 7.87 times 10 to the negative 6. Okay, that equals 5.1.
Yes.
I was wondering like what that meant. I had no idea. I just like that kind of looks like a string of numbers.
Yeah, sorry, it's because I squeezed it in right on that last page there.
Thank you.
Any other questions about this problem? Is Ka equal to Kc? Yes, it is in this case. So Ka is just another special label for acid dissociation. All right. This is the end of exam material. In this last page, I have the list of topics for exam number two, because we have managed to complete all the material for the exam. So there are two chapters involved, mostly the equilibrium chapter. Now, technically, you still need to know the definitions of equilibrium. Not that I'm going to directly ask you about them, but we have learned about this Le Chatelier's principle. And you might remember that I used the three definitions in my discussion of Le Chatelier's principle. So if I came back to a question about definitions, it wouldn't be simply to state them. It would be to use them in that Le Chatelier's discussion. So that's section one, though, what the definitions of equilibrium are. And then we get to section two, which is equilibrium constants. You still need to know that equilibrium constants excludes water, or I should say pure liquids or solids. So you need to know how to write still at a K or Q expression, which that's the whole products raised to coefficients divided by reactants coefficients thing. Because it is such a simple problem, and we can do one on Wednesday because I delayed the exam. That's why I did it, to try to be more fair. You should be able to calculate K or Q if you have the right information. So in other words, if I give you the final concentrations, or I give you enough information to tell you what's going on in a reaction, then it is a much simpler math problem to just take that information, substitute it in, and get a K or Q. The next thing I'll talk about is manipulations of K. And that's what we did today, where the K of the reverse reaction is equal to 1 over K of the forward reaction, and how K of two reactions combined is just the product of the two equilibrium constants. So that takes care of section two. And then moving on to section three. I'll just say this. There's not going to be another KP-KC problem. We already did it. Section 4. Q versus K. You could get another Q versus K reaction situation. Not as likely. That's why this is put in blue, which means, yeah, the topic might come up, but not exactly the same way it was on the quiz. So the more important thing is that, yes, you're obviously going to have some kind of ice problem. And the strong hint, not certainty though, but the strong hint is that it might be some sort of pH problem. And that's why I'll do the summary of acids and bases right after this. So we already talked about the ice method. The last big conceptual, and it is a big one, is Le Chatelier's principle. So I say, what is it? And I say three definitions. It's not that there's three definitions of Le Chatelier's principle. It's that I use the three definitions of equilibrium to explain Le Chatelier's principle. So if I felt like grading forever a really tedious, long problem about explaining Le Chatelier's principle using the three principles, well, that's what it would be. But I do have other ways of asking the question to get to some of the same information. but you know, better review just in case. Now, there's the more practical issue of the effects of volume. That only applies to gases, but remember that we talked about how changing the volume changes pressure, and if you don't have the same number of moles of reactants and products, that's going to change the equilibrium constant. We talked about effects Now, let me make this a little more evil. So effects of volume on K versus Q. K is not affected. Temperature is the only thing that affects K. But Q is what could be affected, the balance of products and reactants, because I think I said that inaccurately earlier. So same thing here. Effects of concentration on K versus Q. Nope. Just starts, it changes where you start in the process, so it'll change Q, but it won't change K where you're going to end up. I'm not going to ask about temperature, because it's more complicated, and I'd like to explain it later, after the exam, I mean. Professor Perilous, I like that. Better hurry up and copyright it.